With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Sports Radio 1050, WFAN, New York City. All sports, all the time.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the first broadcast of WFAN All Sports 1050. You're sharing a part of radio history with us today. This is the beginning of the first 24-hour-a-day sports station. I'm Susan Waldman. The message board outside Yankee Stadium today reads, Vintage Guidry, and last night was indeed a classic Gator performance. Guidry struck out nine and only walked one as the Yanks extended their lead to two games in the AL East. They're going on right now up at Exhibition Stadium and in the top of the
Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
9:03 here in the fan. I am Susan Waldman, and happy anniversary WFAN as we continue this anniversary and reunion weekend here on the fan. I am in New York, and somewhere in the United States is my partner of the day, another original WFANer, my friend Howie Rose. Good morning, Mr. Rose.
Good morning, Susan. You sound the same 33 years later, except for that. That's got to be fake crackling noise in the background, right? Because we've been listening to that tape since 1987. It's always been crystal clear as though it were being broadcast for the first time. Where did that Michigan crackling stuff come from?
No, you haven't. Well, you haven't heard it in the past few years because all of a sudden, I'm not sure what happened.
What's crackling, my brain?
It's like the old kind of tintype movie film that's to show everybody how old we are, and I don't know, different signals, different things, different this and kabocha and all the stuff that goes in. I don't know. I have no idea why it's crackling.
I'm not buying it. It's like fake crowd noise during this baseball season, if we have a baseball season.
Yeah, if we have a baseball season. Yeah. How are you? You coming up here soon?
Yeah, next day or so.
Okay.
And I hope by the time I get there, there haven't been any more events such as we've seen the last few days. I mean, as scary as anything was Masahiro Tanaka taking that line drive off the head from, of all people, Giancarlo Stanton. And then, of course, you've got, as has been outlined on our most recent updates, Freddie Freeman has got the COVID, Felix Hernandez opting out. David Price opting out. And I think, Susan, tell me what you think about this before we start patting each other on the back and celebrating the last 33 years. But I think that if anything is going to compromise the integrity of this truncated season, because so many people have asked, well, is this going to be an authentic season? Is it going to be a legitimate season? That seems to be the key word, legitimacy. If more of these players opt out in tandem with those who test positive and are feeling it the way Freddie Freeman apparently is, then you start scratching your head and saying, is this legitimate at all?
Well,
I don't know the answer to that. It's hypothetical at this point.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that either, but it's to me, the whole thing is, well, you know what I think about this. Freddie Freeman being ill, the scariest one to me, and I do want to get to David Price because, the social media reaction, I understand people want games. I really understand it. If you can't understand why a man with two little babies and a mother that lives in the area doesn't want to put his family at risk for this, I'm really sorry for you. David Price, who is not going to get paid,
trade. And by the way, he gave money to every single minor leaguer in the Dodger organization, $1,000 a person, I think, per month. I mean, that's a lot of people. This is not mm-hmm. someone who should be saying, you know, how dare you not play? How dare people criticize what he's doing? The next person who's undecided is Mike Trout. The third person who's undecided as of yesterday is Buster Posey. You're not going to see the kids do it because they need to get paid. What you're going to see is guys who are worried. Mike Trout's wife is expecting. What happens if they start? Does he go home? Because now they've got all kinds of things for women who are pregnant. This is not the flu, guys. This is really, really serious. And you know what, Howie? The thing that scares me is DJ LeMahieu, who is totally asymptomatic, which means, and it shows you, he was walking around in the stadium. I saw them all. Yes, has been having batting practices and everything, so I've watched it. They were all there. They were all taking BP without masks. They weren't, you know, when they were out by themselves, they had masks, you know, but when they were taking BP, they didn't have masks on. DJ LeMahieu was asymptomatic. 40% of the people that are tested positive are asymptomatic. That is very, very dangerous, and I don't understand why people don't see this. I really don't. I understand you want your games, and I understand everybody has to make money, but this is scaring me. That's all. And Tanaka, as far as I know, was released from the hospital last night, and he's okay. And you mentioned Giancarlo Stanton, Howie. I mean, of all people. I mean, he knows the look of consternation and fear, and mm-hmm. He was distraught afterwards. You could see it on his face because, yes, did have it on the air. They have a robot camera there. Cameramen are not in there, but they have a robot, and it was on. So you did get to see it, and of all people, after he was hit in the face, of course, that, and he understood it, and Aaron Boone had said afterwards he was able to tell Giancarlo that Tanaka was okay when he was at the hospital and probably would be released. And somebody asked Aaron, how is he taking it? And he said, as well as can be expected. Giancarlo, I mean, that's an awful thing, you know, to happen no matter what, but to see it on the first day of BP, and I'm not sure why there wasn't a screen there, but nobody asked me, so...
Well, anyway. They said, you know, from what I saw, Susan, they said about the screen, the L screen, that since it was a sim game, that mm-hmm. they try to replicate game conditions as much as possible. But I believe, if I saw right, that after Tanaka was hurt and they finally got back to business yep. and resumed sim games, they put the screen up. So there goes that excuse.
No, Jordan Montgomery was the next pitcher up, and he was a little... I mean, everybody was shaken, and he said he felt a little nervous, and he would like to have the screen back. And you know, how many times have we seen that? Remember, Jim Codd had always said to us that he'd continue to pitch if he could have a screen in front of him, because now that he was getting to be 60, he couldn't get out of the way that quickly.
Susan, it's funny you mentioned Jim Cott, because sometimes we remember things simply because they happen to stick out in our minds. It's not like we try to retain the memory. They just stay there. Well, I can remember, this must have been about 1962 or 3, somewhere in there. Next time you see Kitty, ask him about this, because he was surprised that I remembered it. I believe the hitter was Bubba Phillips, who hit a line drive right back at Jim Cott's face, knocked out his two front teeth. And I remember the picture in the paper the next day of Jim Cott smiling. He looked like Bobby Clark, the ex-Philadelphia Flyer, and many other hockey players, of course, who don't have their front teeth. But, you know, so I can understand Kitty's sensitivity to that since it happened to him. And, you know, we're talking 60 years ago or close to it.
Yeah, no, I do remember that. 61, maybe? 61, 62?
Right in that area. Yeah. Bubba Phillips, I seem to recall, is the guy who, with Detroit, I think, yep. hit the line drive wow. back to him. But we're celebrating something a little more recent than 1961, 2, or 3. We're celebrating what's happened on the airwaves since 1987. I say celebrate, and Susan, I don't know if that's the right word. I'm a little uncomfortable using it because of the very complex times in which we live right now. I kind of feel more comfortable saying we're commemorating the 33rd anniversary of WFAN. But you heard the clip. You were the very first voice that was heard on this radio station. Throw out a couple of brief recollections of the 5 or 10 minutes leading up to your intro, and then I'll piggyback with one of my own.
You know what was, and I was thinking about this, and I was on, obviously, that time of day. I was on 3 o'clock on with with Joe and Evan, and we did that. And I do remember a couple of things about that. The place was packed with people. I remember Russ Salzburg had a television camera in there, and it was a little studio, and the people on the other side of the glass, how we always say, Steve Summers always said, on the other side of the glass. This is what I remember, Howie, and it stays with me. And that first day, there were a lot that made me not be able to sleep, but this was one of them. I looked to my right, and I could see everybody from WHN standing there.
Yep.
And they were holding hands and people were crying. And it really became really clear to me, Howie, as soon as I opened my mouth and started to talk, WHN would cease to exist. It really hit me. I mean, it really did. And I saw, and I'm trying to think, I think Asa was there and Sue Guzman was there. And I was trying
Asa
to think of the
Dorfman,
Asa
one of the
Dorfman.
All-time greats.
Oh, and Sue Guzman, who still lives up here and does news up here.
Yes.
Just remember the whole thing, and I can still see them, and tears were coming down people's face, and they were all holding hands. And I really thought, when you open your mouth, WHN, that's been there forever, will cease to exist. It really, that was my thought until like the third update when I heard get that smart-ass broad with the Boston accent off my air in primetime. Until I heard that, I was into this whole, you know, esoteric thing about WHN. What do you remember about that day?
Oh, it's going to segue perfectly with what you just said, because I was guilty of one of the greatest examples or worst examples, depending on your perspective, of front-running that has ever been known. Because when you talk about WHN literally going out of business as soon as you opened your mouth, that was the radio station, A, where I had a very, very deep emotional connection to, because when I started a fan club for Marv Albert way back in 1967, Marv was at WHN. We used to go visit him up at WHN Studios, which then were located at 400 Park Avenue in Manhattan. And lo and behold, I would begin my radio career 10 years after that at WHN. And so there I am at that moment, the sports director of WHN in 1987. I had been told that when the station switched formats, and I was doing Mets Extra back then anyway, that not only was I going to be held over and brought over as part of the WFAN staff, but that I would also host the 7 to midnight show when there was no game. So there's the backdrop. And so that scene that you described of everybody holding hands, if you're old enough to remember the iconic final scene of the old Mary Tyler Moore show.
Yes,
remember
yes.
The way everybody in that newsroom was huddled together and they were afraid to take more than a couple of steps because they knew sooner or later they were going to have to separate. Well, that was the emotion in that studio that you were looking at. It was a bit of a scrum, as we say in sports. And I was right in the middle of it, feeling as emotional and sad and upset because I was with friends, some of whom I'd known for years, who were losing their jobs. So what happened was, I think Dan Taylor was the disc jockey. He signed off the final song in the history of WHN, whatever it was. I'm part of that emotional wreck of a group. But as soon as they signed off that last song, I kind of ducked away from the group. I crawled out of the studio, and then I went across the room into the studio where you were speaking from, because now I'm part of WFAN with all of the executives in there who were so excited at the literal beginning of this radio station. And as soon as you opened your mouth and we were on the air, we're all high-fiving and back-slapping each other. And so in the span of about 1 minute and 21 seconds, I went from despair to euphoria. How's that for front running?
Yeah. Well, that's life, isn't it? You know what was interesting? Somebody had said when they played that that update, somebody said to me, boy, that was pretty good. And I said, well, that was the only good update I ever did, I think, because back in those days, and people don't remember this, there were no computers. There was nothing. You ripped it off a thing, and that was the first one I had written down, and I had actually practiced it. And in those days, we were doing full 5-minute updates 4 times an hour. You know, the top 15,
every
15 minutes. And it was a nightmare. So you would pick, you would rip and read, and if someone made a mistake on the ticker, that's what came out of your mouth. And it was really, really difficult. The first computer I ever saw in there, it wasn't even a computer, Howie. Do you remember those word processors? They had green backgrounds, and you wrote in white. And then I remember trying to do that, and I said, I can't do this. I'll write it down myself. And it was very, very difficult to do. And I didn't realize that. It's very different now. I mean, you know, it's on a computer. You write it out. You know, you don't like something, you erase it. You couldn't do that then. And so it was a very, very different time. It was, yeah, that I do remember is that green screen.
I'll tell you what else I loved about that first couple of years. And they were turbulent years, to be sure, really the first one in particular. I mean, it got to a point where there were so many mistakes made. And how can you blame any executive for making mistakes? It was completely uncharted territory that they were wandering in. But I would come to work every day afraid that the door was going to be padlocked and we'd all be out of business because, you know, this was a very, very expensive experiment. But of all the things I remember was the feeling that, and you might have had some of this too, I'd always marveled at the early days of television when everything was live and they were making it up as they went along. You know, sets would come tumbling down, things wouldn't work, and they'd have to improvise and ad-lib, and they really needed to be talented to work their way through that, and that's what made them such great performers, not only news, but, you know, live television shows. Everything was live back then. And I'd always, even as a very, very young broadcaster, wished that I could have been part of that, where you essentially were pioneers within a fledgling industry. And that's how I felt about those first couple of years at WFAN, trying to make this format work. And so through that lens and prism, I look back at these 33 years and marvel at where we've come and feel so, so proud to have been a part of it and to continue even in these somewhat peripheral ways to be a part of it today.
You know, it's interesting because I was thinking of all the things that did, and we all were pioneers because I always thought it was going to, I, you know, that's how I do things. I always think it's going to work some way, but I knew it had to be changed. I knew it had to get away from the national feel, you know, because you're in the middle of New York, and I remember the first time I went, this is after they yelled at me about my updates and moved me to the overnights with Steve Summers, thinking I was going to quit, which I didn't, but I went to the then program director, the late John Pruder, and I said, you know what, on the morning show, and it was Greg Gumbel who was doing the morning show, you've got people like Moss Klein and Bill Madden or whatever, all these guys from different newspapers talking about the Yankees and the Mets. I said, they're never going to tell us anything. Give me a tape recorder. I'll get in my car and I'll go everywhere. That's how this all started. Because I said, give me a tape recorder, I'll go. You don't have to pay for it. I'll just drive everywhere, get me a credential. And that's when I showed up talking to people in 87, Yankees and Mets and all three hockey teams and both basketball teams. And that's how it got to be more and more so that it was just us. And then we all started breaking stories because the newspaper guys weren't going to give us any stories. And when the newspaper guys realized that if I found something out at 1 o'clock in the morning, I could call the air. I could go on the air with it and break the news. And I'm sure you did that too. And the newspapers couldn't do that. And that was something that I knew we, you know, now it's all different because it's, don't forget, there was no 24-hour news cycle. It really wasn't. There was just me and my type recorder and Bill Meth and Bob Traynor and those guys that got cuts for years. And the guys at Sports Phone. You know, I sat next to Bob Papa and, I mean, all those people. We were all together in this auxiliary press box wherever we were. And everybody went on to other things. But that's how it all started. And to be able to break stories was the big thing, I think.
Well, when I think back to that first little while on the air, I just think of all the mistakes that were made. And I'm not blaming anybody because they were kind of flying blind. But the person who was tasked with organizing a staff, an on-air staff and behind-the-scenes staff, but especially the on-air staff, and getting us on the air was a wonderful man by the name of John Channon, who has long since passed away. John was a network radio producer for many, many years at ABC Radio. And I've been told, I never did find out or haven't yet if this is true or not, and I don't know where I would get that information from anyway, but they told me, whoever they were, that John Channon was literally the prototype for the Lou Grant character, as we mentioned, the old Mary Tyler Moore show. I mean, he was so gruff on the outside, but such a sweet teddy bear on the inside. That's just who he was. And so part of that teddy bear persona was that he was very, very loyal, particularly to the people that he'd hired and worked with for years. But they were all network people who had no New York sensibilities. And so we didn't sound a thing like New York. We're doing all kinds of college football stuff. But nobody in New York back then, for sure, cared about college football. I'll tell you what, there was one show in the middle of the summer when my producer, really nice guy, I'm not going to name him now because this may sound a little embarrassing, and I don't mean to embarrass him, but he says to me, "Oh, I got you a great guest for tonight." And this is in like July or August. He goes, "You're going to have Bobby Kremins." I go, "Excuse me, Bobby Kremins, the head basketball coach at Georgia Tech on a New York radio station? Are you kidding me? Who in the heck wants to hear from Bobby Kremins with the Yankees and Mets in pennant races, the Jets and Giants in camp, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?" And this was the big problem we had that first year or two, was sounding like New York. We just didn't, and it almost ruined us.
And you know who, when we have my partner John Sterling on at noon, John Channon is the man who hired me, and he had a vision for what I would be. And I was introduced to him by Ken Coleman, the late voice of the Boston Red Sox. And he was fabulous. He would know about that. And John will know about that Lou Grant thing, I'll bet. The other thing is that he ran a thing called Enterprise Radio, which was the precursor to this. And he wanted, and it was a national thing. John worked on that station. Ed Coleman worked on that station. And the people that were John Riley, Lou Boda, Lou Palmer, all those people that came with us, were all with John Channon there. And he's the one who had the idea of having Pete Franklin come on. And of course, you know, Pete Franklin didn't show up for a few months because he had been ill, had a heart attack. Did you know that that's where I met John Sterling? John Sterling, I think it was the second or third week of the station when I was doing afternoon updates, 3 to 7, whatever it was. John Sterling, during the All-Star break, came in and did a week of shows. That's where I met John.
That's interesting, because they did use a lot of fill-in hosts during those first couple of months before Pete came aboard.
They sure did. I did a week with Jimmy Pearsall, whom I knew because I used to babysit for him in the late 50s. When I was 10 or 11, he lived around the sort of around the corner from me. And so it was something. And then,
I hope you mean you babysat his child or else you're
yes,
older
no,
than
not
I think.
For him. Yes. No, there. Well, yeah. I didn't really know him then. I knew his wife, Mary. But that was, they lived around the corner, lived next door to a girl that I grew up with. And so we were always there. And he had kids and babysat sometimes, 10 or 11 years old, little kids. And so I hadn't seen him since then. And you know who was great in those? If you remember, do you remember the late Bud Ferrillo? Who was here for...
Yes, from L.A. Yep.
Oh, was he great. I just loved him. He did a few weeks. Because John had to get back to work.
He worked more in that slot. Yeah, he worked more in that slot than anybody until Pete was well enough to come back.
Right, right. But that's the whole sensibility. Pete didn't work here because whatever he did in Cleveland, it's not New York. It's like when I was still in Boston, you'd listen to Eddie Andelman on the air, and who was so Boston and so great, and then he tried to come to New York. It just doesn't work. I mean, it's a different city. It didn't work well.
You know what? Susan, Pete was a showman, but he didn't know anything. I mean, certainly about New York, you know, he could throw Cleveland references out because that's where he'd been for about 30 years. But, you know, again, who cared about that? And you know, just to sort of capsulize the challenge that we had in sounding like New York early on, you mentioned John Pruder, may he rest in peace. And he had asked me at one point, as it was becoming evident that we needed to sound like New York, he said, if you could think of any young broadcasters that you know who we could bring in as update people to improve our sound and maybe someday become a show host, but, you know, just think of somebody. Well, I had known this kid who was recently graduated from Fordham. I don't know how long he had been out of school, but it wasn't very long. But you knew as soon as you met him that he was an up-and-comer. And so I suggested that he get in touch with Pruder. He did, went in for an interview, and Pruder said to him, I think you ought to think of another line of work for your professional career. That kid walked dejectedly out of the studios. His name is Bob Papa. Okay? So
really?
This is what we had. Yes. So this is what we had assessing talent at the time. I mean, you know, Bob's become a brilliant and versatile broadcaster, as anybody who knew him back then knew that he would. And yet this was the hurdle we had to overcome. So if there's any one thing that I'm going to take credit for from those very, very early days at WFAN, it's that, you know, I think my sound was somewhat unique in that it was the only one that kind of sounded like New York, knew about New York sports among most of the regular show hosts. And when I was able to convince enough people that we were making a big mistake here and they started to listen and bring more New York people in, and that, of course, culminated a couple of years later with Mike and the Mad Dog, then we were on our way, and obviously the frequency change was the corner being turned as well.
Yeah, and that was, and the interesting thing about those national people, I'd once said to somebody talking about the Yankees, I said, you know what, this is too general. If you can't tell me what ex-Yankee catcher put his plane down on Route 5 in San Diego, I don't want to talk to you. And, you know, you know what I mean? It's like the little details that go on over and over and over. I've been in this city since 1969. So it's you know, the accent doesn't go away, but it changes. And if you don't know what makes New Yorkers run, you know, it's going to be hard to put together a radio station. And by the way, I'll tell you something that has not changed, because Pete Hoffman is texting me furiously that we have to break. So I will tell you what we are going to do. 9:30, this day in Yankee history, July 5th, 1998. David Cohn beat the Orioles 1-0. The Yankees improved to 61-20. That equaled the best 81-game start in the history. 1902 Pirates and 1907 Cubs did it too, but Howie and I were not there. David Cohn has a wonderful perspective, I think, on this, because with the Mets in 87, and now here, I mean, I think of him as a Yankee, but he spent all those years with the Mets, saw talk radio and how it changed things. And I would love to get an ex-athlete's perspective on that. At 10 o'clock, guy who was on the air with me when I was in San Francisco in the middle of the earthquake, the television voice of the New York Mets, and that will be Gary Cohen. 10:30, big treat. Thank you, Howie, for doing this. Davey Johnson's going to be with us. 11 o'clock, we're going to have some fun. Steve Cohen and Eric Spitz, now both vice presidents of sports programming at Sirius. When they started here in 1987, there was something called desk assistants and what. And it was Steve Cohen and I that went all over the place to do the remotes with George. 11:30, a special thing for that, I think, a treat. Howie did an interview with Mickey Mantle that we're going to play at 11:30, and he's telling me, I said, what did I say, noon? It's 1 o'clock. We're here till 1. At noon, my partner, John Sterling, will talk about memories. These are people that have all been on this air and celebrating with us. At 12:30, Paul Olden did 4 years as the Jets announcer here, also did the Angels, Tampa Bay, Indians, and the Yankees, and has one of the great tirades in radio history with Tommy Lasorda back in 1978. So, yeah.
Classic.
So, you know, that's a classic. Paul Olden, Tommy Lasorda, 1978. You got your little computers. Go look it up. It's amazing. Anyway, we'll be back on the other. It is an all-timer, except for Lee Ilya and the Cubs. We'll be back after this with the one and only David Cohn, Susan Waldman, Howie Rose here on The Fan.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.